Bar by Dylan Siegel. Chocolate Bar means awesome to Dylan Siegel, the 6-year-old first grader who wrote this book to raise money for a friend who has a rare liver condition called glycogen storage disease type 1B. All money raised will be donated to his friend Jonah's charity, the Jonah Pornazarian GSD type 1B fund at the University of Florida. To a 6-year-old with a big idea, this book being published is Chocolate Bar. Chocolate Bar by Dylan Siegel, illustrated by Dylan Siegel. I like to go to Disneyland. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go to Universal Studios. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go to the beach. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go swimming. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go to the aquarium. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go to the bowling alley. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to go to the arcade. That is so Chocolate Bar. I like to help my friends. That is the biggest Chocolate Bar. This book is dedicated to my friend Jonah. All money made will be donated to the Jonah Pornazarian GSD Fund. Thank you for your help.
Woo! Thank you. Hey, you guys. This is Chris Denson from Innovation Crush, and that was Dylan Siegel. Say hello, Dylan.
Hello.
No, say hello, Dylan. Hello, Dylan. Okay, we'll get the joke later. That was also Dad, David Siegel.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
And that reading was so Chocolate Bar. Thank you.
Thank you.
So people don't think I'm weird and not like I'm because I'm a grown man and I now have a kid on the show for the first time ever. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell people who you are. What's your name and what is that book we just heard?
So my name is Dylan Siegel and I'm 9 years old and I wrote a book called Chocolate Bar because I wanted to raise enough money to cure my friend's rare disease called glycogen storage disease type 1B. So I wrote the book and we sold 30,000 copies in all 50 states and over 60 countries and raised $1.2 million.
Yeah. Can I borrow a little bit of that? I mean, I know your friend needs it, but is there like a little, a 10 spot, right?
Nah.
Okay. No, all right. No. So what is glycogen storage? What type 1B?
Yeah, it's very confusing. Glycogen storage disease type 1B.
And what does that mean?
It has something to do with the liver, and like he can't turn like sugar into glucose, I think. So like he needs to drink cornstarch and water mixed with water every couple of hours to keep his blood sugar at a regular level. Because his liver doesn't work as well as regular people. So and the 1B part, there's 1A, so that's the 1A part. That's just like the regular disease. So 1B, there's an extra part of it. Like he has no white blood cells. He has very little. So like he can't fight diseases. Like if he gets a cold, he might end up in the hospital. Or an infection.
So as far and when I talked to you before, you and I had a conversation, and you were in a suit. That I'm a little disappointed that you're in a t-shirt this time, but you look good in the suit too.
Well, he's in his special Chocolate Bar.
He is. Well, that is true. That is a suit in and of itself. So let's talk about how and why this started. I mean, both of you can jump in on this, but you are 9 years old currently. As of yes. July 28th. I got it. And this book was written when you were 6.
Yes.
So give me the story on how this even became an idea for you. What was going on in 6-year-old Dylan's brain that happened, that this book popped up?
So I was in first grade. My friend was getting fed with this weird tube that I saw that looked kind of mysterious, and I was wondering what it was and why he needed it. So then one day my mom ended up telling me about the disease, and then I realized that that's the person that I see every day getting fed through this tube that's connected to his stomach. So my mom said, "Do you want to donate $100 from your piggy bank?" And I'm like, "Sure, I'll donate $100." or do you want to do a lemonade stand or bake sale? And I was like, wait, I want to do a book because you could make more money by making a book than doing a lemonade stand or a bake sale, because you could only sell like lemonade or cookies for $2, and a book you could sell for $10 to $20. And I just wanted to make as much money as I can to cure his disease.
That's great. And so 30,000 books later, that is a great, I can't even write an email correctly, let alone sell 30,000 copies of a book. Dad, so when this idea came up, when Dylan says, hey, a book, like what happens? What's the first step? You go, yeah. Okay, kid. Yeah.
Well, as soon as my wife and I were done patting each other on the back at what great parents we were, we were thinking to ourselves, okay, Dylan, just go to sleep, stop talking, leave us alone. But it started to resonate with us. And we're like, wait a minute, he wants to write a book. That's so interesting. But we've got other kids, and our older one will say something and then it'll kind of never materialize. And, Dylan says stuff sometimes and he sort of just kind of goes through with it. And we were like, wait a minute, maybe he's serious. Maybe something's going to happen here. And so literally the next day, when we thought he was just going to forget about it, he came back to us and threw 16 pages on the desk in front of my wife and said, here's my book. I've done my part. Now do yours.
Hey, you go get my money.
Right.
Was that what you said? You said, you go get my money?
Yeah, you go get my money.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's funny because he was really, really determined, and there was sort of like this passion and this fire in his eyes. But there was so much going on with the family, as you can imagine. Always, you have two kids. You know, we have three, and there's school, and there's work. And
what are the age ranges of the other two?
So the little one at the time was just a baby. And then the older one at the time was, I think, 9. Again, lots of stuff going on, the sports and the school and the activities and the everything else in between. And at the time, also my wife's father, my father-in-law, was diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma.
Oh, no.
Basically given a death sentence. He was given 3 to 6 months to live. They said, get your affairs in order and wrap it up because your time has come.
Right.
And it was really, really tough for all of us, the kids being so close to him and my wife, being so close. And by the way, he's our built-in babysitter.
So that's, that's probably the most painful part of it. Very, very painful. I know that feeling.
So we were just distracted. We didn't have a lot of time to deal with this book. So Dylan would come back to us day in and day out and say, Mom and Dad, I've done my part. Now do yours. And he would, with this determination and this fire, he said, I want my book done. Just put it in that thing on your desk, make some copies, staple it together, and I'm going to go sell it to my teachers and my friends, and we're going to raise some money. And so finally, one thing led to another. And, I had some friends who gave me some guidance in terms of how to lay this out at my work.
Right.
And without touching its purity, keeping it in its very authentic state, they just laid it out so that we could take it to a printer and actually get it printed. And we got the book printed and brought it back to Dylan for approval. And he signed off on it, like any good creative does, and we were off to the races.
And it's quite a signature you got there. Has your handwriting improved?
I hope.
has your storytelling improved?
Yes, I hope.
So let's talk about that, though, because you did have to go tell the story. And I don't know if you – maybe you did. Did you think this book was going to be as successful as it is, or you said, oh, okay, I'm going to write it and see what happens?
Well, yeah, I was like confident. I was like, yeah, we're going to raise $1 million.
So you set $1 million goal at the beginning.
Yes.
Which really scared his parents because let me tell you, he came to us with the idea, which in and of itself is really interesting. And then the fact that he was able to kind of connect IP, like, just the storytelling to a change in the world and creating a solution was really interesting to us. And then after we had our first kind of book sale where Dylan and his buddy Jonah got together and at a Good Deeds Day at school, they sold copy after copy and they raised, about $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And at that point, we're like, wow, we're onto something. But then the very following day was like a parent some sort of a PTA meeting. And they brought Dylan up to kind of honor him for the good deed that he did at school,
right,
and raising all this money. And I believe it was my wife who put the microphone in front of him and said, okay, what do you want to do next? The audience wants to know. And unbeknownst to anybody, including my wife, he said, I want to raise $1 million. And so, of course, the whole audience is like, woo, and everyone's cheering. And my wife is, of course, now quaking in her boots going, oh, my God.
Now you go get my money.
Yeah, we're going to have to go do this. So Dylan was steadfast in that determination and was deadly serious when he said $1 million because how determined he was to get the book published. Then is how determined he was to get that $1 million.
And I mean, so $1.2 million to date. Are you still selling the book?
Yes, we are still selling the book, and we are at $1.2 million.
Where are you selling the book?
We are selling it online. What? And sometimes at chocolatebarbook.com, and sometimes like we sell our book at like our Good Deeds Day at school.
Along with the success and the rise of the book, you start to like when you and I met, it was at a conference, the Sandbox Summit. Shout out to Wendy Smolin, a good friend.
She's amazing.
What a great conference.
She,
yeah, it went really well. Especially the highlight for me was seeing you on stage and giving this presentation on, you know, your process. How long were you on stage for? Do you remember how much time it was?
I don't know, like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. We are, by the way, this is the first time we're recording in the studio, so congratulations. And my first time as a kid. Your first time being interviewed by an adult, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, okay.
On the radio, yeah.
Yeah,
exciting.
Yeah.
So, podcast. Very exciting.
We'll graduate to radio. We'll get there. Yeah. But we're also inside the Hollywood Improv. So a lot of people can't do 5-10 minutes of stand-up comedy, let alone give a presentation on, you know, a business vision and its success. So what was the first time you actually got to talk in front of a big group about, outside of school, the first time you got to talk to a big group about what you're doing?
Well, that's pretty hard, huh? Let me think.
Maybe the first time, big group, well, the first time you presented the book and read it in front of everybody was at the Barnes & Noble book signing during Christmas of the first year did the book.
Barnes & Noble.
Were you nervous?
Not really.
You don't strike me as a nervy type of kid.
No, I wasn't thinking about being nervous. I was just like excited, you know.
Does Jonah go with you wherever when you're doing these things? He's been to a couple, yeah.
Yeah, most of the time.
And he's currently your best friend. Yes. I'm assuming BFF now at this point.
They're great pals. I mean, they've known each other since, man. How old were you guys when you first met?
3 years old. Two years old. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, Dad, I guess, how do you stay as attached to this project, you know, at least, especially in the beginning? Because I think in the beginning, like you said, and that my daughter is like, just the other day, she goes, she was trying to learn how to play a song on the piano, and she looked it up on YouTube, and she was getting frustrated with dragging the computer back and forth to the piano, and was like, "Oh, what about a computer piano or something like that?" I was like, "Oh, great idea!" And I'm like, "Go to sleep," right? I did not get the request the next day in the morning.
She's done,
right? So, I mean, this is a 3-year journey now that you've been on. So, what kind of resources? Because I would love for parents to know like how they can also do this for their kids.
It cost us $1.4 million to raise $1.2 million.
Exactly.
Right. No, I mean, the reality is, I think it was really his determination, and it was just that drive and that vision and this whole connecting the dots between storytelling and change agents. And, you know, having spent a long time at Disney, you know, as a marketer, I learned a thing or two about storytelling and connecting story to a major vision and really kind of, you know, moving an audience and creating an experience. And this really touched me in a way that I think the storytelling at Disney touches me and gazillions of people everywhere. And when he wrote this, I realized there was a great story to be told. When he named it Chocolate Bar, I'm like, wait a minute, that's really kind of interesting and sticky and adorable, and you know, chocolate bar is his expression for
and delicious
awesome. And delicious and sweet
and yummy
and it was just a great overall great story. And chocolate bar meaning you know, awesome, and his this friendship between him and his pal and his sort of naivete and innocence behind wanting to raise all of this money, it just all sort of struck me as like this incredible story and really authentic,
right?
And you know, authenticity, as we all know, is a big buzzword, and it's incredibly important when telling your story. Again, what's something that I learned, you know, day one at Disney is telling this great story that keeps people sort of on the edge of their seat, that's completely relatable and that sort of thing. So this had all those kind of trappings, but to me, I never wanted it to be an exploitation of Dylan or his pal or this disease. I wanted it to be authentic, and I wanted it to be a story that people fell in love with organically. So right. We didn't set out on this journey to break any records or sell, you know, 30,000 books or raise $1.2 million. We set out to tell a story that if people engaged in it and wanted to kind of show up to this party, then great. If not, then we weren't going to push them to do it.
Yeah.
And so
How do you strike that balance, right? Like, you know, you're in marketing. So even as a marketer, whether it's in your own thing or just with chocolate bar, how do you strike the balance of, you know, not pimping out your kid right. versus like, you know, pimping out your kid in a good way?
Yeah. So. Well, I think it was, again, because people came to us. Barnes & Noble thought this was a really exciting idea, and they allowed for us to have a book reading there and a book signing. It was right before Christmas. We brought in a children's choir from Dylan's school to sing. We provided sort of some extra value to Barnes & Noble in that they could, you know, entertain people. And at the same time, maybe a news crew would find it interesting. And a news crew did find it interesting. And I think early on, a couple news crews showed up to the event. They covered it, and they told our story. So we started to realize, oh, wait a minute. This is a story that we're not just telling and sharing. This is a story that other people want to tell and share.
Right.
And that's when it started to really kind of come through to us that we have something here to share. And this is larger than just a disease. This is larger than just two little boys. This is something that could be replicated.
Right.
If the right people sort of look at it and discover it and fall in love with the story. And it has been replicated.
Well, it's kind of like times. What you did was create a movement, right? I ironically, have you ever seen the movie Aquila and the Bee?
I have never seen that.
Amazing movie. Yeah.
It's a great one. I just watched the other day with my daughter, and it was like
so inspiring.
This girl wanted to be in the spelling bee, and she was really good speller. Went to not the best school, and so she got a coach, and then went on and on. And then towards the end of the movie, her coach quits. Right. But the community that she lived in, like everybody loved what she was doing so much that they just all started helping. What were some of the, I don't know, was there like a moment that you remember where somebody that was really touching for you? And you're like, oh my gosh, that was really awesome that somebody would do that. Right. Anything that you remember?
Well, yeah, like all my friends and stuff were like giving us lots of money and really cared and really wanted to help when we were selling it at our Good Deeds Day. Like, we made thousands of dollars that day just because of our friends' donations.
That's great.
We thought it was interesting, too, as, you know, we started to get unsolicited notes, emails, phone calls, letters, you know, from all over the world to Dylan saying, hey, we've seen what you've done. It's inspired us to do great things. We got all these videos. There's one video that comes to mind, these really adorable kids from a school in Brazil, of all places, recorded this video sort of reading their own version of their chocolate bar book to raise money for their own effort. And that's when we kind of started to realize, wait a minute, this is a movement. We've created a platform of inspiration for other children all over the place to kind of point their creativity or aim their creativity at a solution. You know, the family in Florida who were looking to raise $1 million to help cure their son's rare disease, I think mitochondria, I believe is what it's called. And they sort of used our model to grow their own movement. And that to us was the greatest reward of this all, you know, getting these unsolicited letters, these unsolicited phone calls. And then when the Chelsea Clintons of the world suddenly start calling and saying, hey, I've seen this story. This is inspiring to me. I'd like to cover it and put it on the news and spend the day with Dylan and walk around to school and get involved in his life just to kind of see what it's all about. We're like, okay, this is like she's standing in, you know, the living room here. This is unbelievable.
Is that stuff a big deal to you? Or is it kind of like, all right, cool. There's a lady named Chelsea here.
It was a big deal. It was really nice meeting her and like having her walk around my school and see what I was doing all day and see really what I do every day.
That's really cool. Who else have you gotten to meet?
I met Jeff Probst. I went on his show. Diane Sawyer, I went on her show.
Look at me. I'm in the ranks of Jeff Probst and and Diane Sawyer.
Right.
I'm doing pretty good.
How about that, Andrew? Or you move.
You can have the rest of the day off.
That is so chocolate bar of me.
Right.
There's a lot of products on. Like I got a bracelet on. There's hair ties. There's chocolate on the table. So let's talk about merchandising for a second. What is the chocolate bar universe consist of? What else can we have from the chocolate bar movement?
Well, we've made many other things too, like phone covers. I'm actually wearing a chocolate bar shirt right now, and chocolate bars and hair ties like you already said, and a bracelet. So like we've made many products, and a lot of people who already bought our book are like, wow, there's more chocolate bar stuff. We want to buy that too. We want to help chocolate bar even more and get a phone case for my phone.
What's the favorite thing what's your favorite moment so far?
My favorite moment? That's really hard.
I know.
I liked everything.
You know, spending time in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that was fun.
Well, I did peel, I peeled back the cover on this actual chocolate bar, and I saw a Hershey. So is Hershey's a participant and a willing participant in the takeover?
Hershey's been an amazing partner. They've been an amazing partner. That, you know, we reached out to them.
Can I crack this open, by the way?
Oh, please.
This is literally chocolate bar.
Get into that Hershey chocolate.
I'm going to share with you guys. Don't worry.
Please. Thank you. No, they've been a great partner, and it was very surreal. Another moment that really just a great, cute, you know, funny little story. You know, we're dealing with this 7-year-old child, and he could be completely unpredictable. We don't know what's going to come out of his mouth.
$1 million.
Right. $1 million. That's the first thing that came out of his mouth. So we were invited by Hershey to their global marketing conference. Each year they have their annual summit to talk about branding and roll out new products. And it's all internal marketing executives. And then little Dylan Siegel is invited to speak on behalf of Chocolate Bar to sort of talk about, you know, what inspires him and talk a little bit to their corporate social responsibility team and get them fired up on what a little kid can do. And, you know, we're halfway through this rollout, which was highly confidential, and we had to sign waivers, and we weren't allowed to kind of even be in parts of it. And then suddenly the CMO gets on the stage and invites Dylan to come up on the stage to sit on the CEO's wingback chair. And to me, marketer coming from Disney, spending years in this business, living vicariously through my 7-year-old child who's now sitting in the CEO of Hershey's chair being interviewed by the CMO of the Hershey Company. And this to me was just another one of those sort of defining moments. But of course, my wife and I were looking at each other going, oh my God, how did we get here? But then we're like, oh my God, what's he going to say? Well, there's no way to prep him to go on stage.
No PR prep.
Yeah, there's just the CMO wants to ask a bunch of questions. And he was amazing. I mean, he answered the questions and he was great. And we were biting our nails the whole time going, oh my God, what's he going to say? And it was just wonderful. I mean, that's another one of those sort of defining moments that really made us wake up and go, wow. Again, there's something here that he has created. This is a brand that has legs and has, we hope, longevity and shows kids that they've got power. And I think that's been one of our key sort of tenets here is that this little guy had this idea and we helped him, but it's been his vision time and time again. He's the marketer. He's the one coming up with the ideas. The day before our first book sale, he's the one that said, Dad and Mom, hello, why aren't we selling chocolate bars with the books? And my wife and I are like, who is this kid? So my wife went to Whole Foods and Whole Foods fell in love with the story and they donated our first, you know, before Hershey came to the table, they donated our first set of chocolate bars, which is just incredible because they loved the story.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, and I'm curious as to, because you hear a lot of people say, they came to us. Like, where was the breaking point of pushing it out? And like, all right, we've covered enough grounds, and then, you know, sort of this pendulum swings back, if you will.
Right. So at a certain point, again, because we were trying to be really authentic with the storytelling and we never wanted to come off like, to your point, we're trying to pimp out our son or pimp out the story. If that happens, it reads inauthentic, it reads inorganic, and it falls apart. But, you know, at the same time, you can only tell the story so many times until people are just sort of burned out. So it is when that tipping point comes, when you think you've had all the news you can have and raised all the dollars you can have, the story then starts to be about momentum. Like this little boy had raised $500,000-$700,000 really off the back of just goodwill and again, innocence and just the kind gesture of thousands and tens of thousands of people around the world. But at a certain point, okay, can we get to that $1 million? So I think the focus then shifted to, hey world, you've been incredibly helpful here. Let's not forget about what we're trying to do here, which is help cure a rare disease. That's the whole point here. Dylan has set out to make $1 million. Let's help him get there. Let's push him there. And then suddenly the focus and the story and the momentum shifted to let's help Dylan get to that $1 million.
Right.
And let's help him get there before a milestone. Milestone being the, you know, New Year's 2014. And so boom, that sort of was the shift and the momentum. And suddenly the news called again. And it was sort of this incoming barrage of phone calls from every news organization you can imagine, every sort of interesting talk show. And we were able to kind of help along this journey towards $1 million by really help, you know, utilizing the goodwill and good nature of the press.
Let's talk about work-life balance.
Yes.
Because you didn't drop out. You didn't drop out to do this. You have maintained your student status, I'm assuming. What grade are you in now? Second, third?
Fourth.
That's what I said. how are your grades?
My grades are good.
Well, what was it in your last report card?
I don't remember. remember.
Okay, well.
But I do good on my test.
Okay, that's the important
right,
part.
Right, except that one test he brought home, what was it, like a 78?
No, it was a 93.
Oh, see? Oh, he told you.
This year he brought home, what, a 78, and he put it down in front of us and said, you have to sign this because, you know, we bring home.
He's like, I'm not signing this.
I'm not signing this. And he's like, okay. So he goes to mom. And mom's like, I'm not signing this. So the next day, Dylan takes the test back to school and goes to the teacher and says, my parents won't sign this. I need to retake it. And so they gave him the test to retake.
And that's when you got the 93?
No.
Oh, you got a 79.
What'd you get?
I got like a 14 and a half out of 15.
Ah, very okay.
How do you get half a
who knows?
All right. What school is this?
Very tough.
And then so outside of school and grades, I mean, you have two siblings. Are they boys or girls? What are your brother and sister?
Boys.
How do you, as a parent, or even you as a sibling, like maintain the, you know, because it's all, I was just talking to my daughter the other day about quality time and like, well, make sure like everybody, there's all these different subsets of QT that you get within the family unit. So like, how did you strike that balance with the rest of the family? And here you're on a global tour, you know, and taking this book around.
Thankfully, it's been something that Dylan has been so excited about that it's been infectious, and the teachers have been okay with it, and his grades have been good enough where he can kind of take time off from school and travel to Houston or travel to Florida and visit the doctor and kind of check out the institution and the foundation that raises the money and is doing the research. He's going to New York next month to do a mini tour and some presentations. So the school's been very generous in that, but he also delivers. He is aware that he's going to be missing school. He asks for the homework in advance. That one time you did like 10 days of homework in like one night so you can get it all done. So he's vigilant about this and he's excited about doing it. So he's able to strike it. For us, it's challenging. You know, we've got two other kids. They've got their busy schedules. Sometimes Jack, who's the older one, comes with us and sometimes he doesn't. From a work perspective, you know, with all due transparency, it was very challenging because, you know, when I was at Disney, it was very, very intense.
Disney is no joke. Like, I mean, as far as an employer, I mean, they make great products, but
they make the best products.
It comes on the heels of a lot of hard work. Yeah.
A lot of hard work, a lot of responsibility, and a lot of time. And frankly, you know, it got to the point where I was putting, you know, a lot of time until 2 o'clock in the morning on chocolate bar because I'd be at work all day long and I'd have to focus on work and getting our films out there. And at night, you know, come home 8, 9 o'clock at night, eat, kiss the kids, and go to work on chocolate bar until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I was getting no sleep. You know, we were taking a couple trips on behalf of Chocolate Bar during the Disney days, so I'd have to ask for permission to go and do that. And of course, being a massively philanthropic company themselves, they were fully supportive of it. But at a certain point, they're kind of looking at this going, huh, your social media on Chocolate Bar is looking pretty good. What's going on with the social media on your job?
Exactly. Yeah, where's that social media?
Yeah, where's that going?
So. I tweeted.
So yeah, it was definitely a challenge.
That's amazing. What's have you been outside the country yet? Oh, you go ahead. Have some of your own product.
Yes. Indulge.
Chocolate.
There's been a lot of really interesting invitations to Italy, to Canada, Vancouver, I believe it was, to Brazil. I think there was even something in Australia, maybe.
Compton?
Compton could be a good field trip.
All right.
Yeah. We're down.
Have you seen the movie yet, Dylan?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm old enough.
That was a parent test, actually. I was just trying to see.
Yes, no, Dylan.
The table's too big for you to kick him under the table.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I can't reach it. Yeah, so it's been some really awesome.
You know. Have you gone to any? Like,
we haven't. Not yet.
I say that if you're going to go global, go global.
That's a commitment. That's a commitment.
Summertime.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't want me putting any ideas in. So what is next? Like, is there going to be a chocolate bar too? What's chocolate bar in 2016? I mean, from a like as chocolate bar being cool, like what's chocolate bar 2016 looking like?
Well, we are working on a book about like our friendship and all of our progress and everything that's happened. And I also want to make an app so we could send chocolate bar all over the world to people who haven't bought it yet. And I want to like make it creative, and so like they could read my book and then they could make their own version. They could create a new book and sell it to other people to raise money for different causes.
I say you when you get home, look at this website called Wattpad.
Yes.
Wattpad is pretty awesome. It's a storytelling platform. I think Chocolate Bar would do really well in there. Free idea. As long as I get another chocolate bar.
All kinds of ideas are flowing.
So, you know, obviously this is a business, right? And a serious one, it sounds like.
It's a, you know, right now it's a completely not-for-profit
sure.
you know, engine that we haven't taken a dime from. In fact, you know, Jonah's family has spent a lot of money fulfilling these books. You know, it's so funny, you know, Jonah's father in the beginning is like, no problem. However many books you want to make, I'm going to print them for you. Yeah. I don't think he thought he
was. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's a total underestimation right there.
So we've all, you know, gone a lot out of pocket for this, but it's been incredibly worth it in beyond imagination.
But with a, you know, but with a vision like apps and, you know, things that take real resources to make, right?
Yes.
You know, outside of a beautiful crayon and pieces of paper. How do you tackle that? How do you bridge the gap between like where you want to go with it
right.
or are you going to just ride this way for now and kind of just let it naturally progress?
I think the way to go at this point is because a cure has been identified. And we by no means are taking credit for the fact that a cure has been identified.
High five. That's a it happened on your watch.
It happened on our watch, and that's really, really great.
On my watch.
No, not literally on that's a good one though.
On your swatch.
That was a good one.
On your swatch. You know, it's an incredible thing. So we will sort of enjoy that and praise the doctor and be thankful that, you know, whatever effort we did put into this, it has attracted a major global pharmaceutical company to the table to put lots of money into the finishing off of the research that will cure this, the GSD 1A portion of this disease. Now, Jonah's portion 1B has not yet been identified cure-wise, so there's still going to be some money and dollars that need to be put into that, so we're still certainly going to be raising for that. But we've realized that we have an obligation now to build this platform, to your point earlier, and create this engine that allows for kids to use their creativity and point it at a cause. We're calling it Cause Creativity. We're talking to lots of different people right now about sort of mounting this sort of next stage. Dylan had this brilliant idea that he sort of just talked you through, which was, you know what, we've raised $1 million. Now let's give $1 million away. Let's not raise dollars. Let's give it away and raise awareness. And to us, that was like magic. Again, you know, in his own sort of unique, brilliant way, he's guided us towards our next step, which is create a platform, call it Cause Creativity, give kids resources and inspiration to build their own sort of cause engine. Maybe it's writing a book and aiming that book at a cause. There's 30 million people with rare diseases in this country. Can you imagine if 1, 2, 10, 50, 100 kids just pointed at one or two different diseases and started raising dollars? That could cause huge change and solve a lot of big problems. 300 million people around the world. So 10% of this country has a rare disease. News to us, but stuff that we're learning as we go through this. And, you know, if we can build this engine, we've talked to folks at the Department of Education. We've talked to all kinds of big corporations. We're looking to build our board. We're looking to actually build this into something because we feel like Chocolate Bar is now a brand. It stands for something, stands for kids and their efforts and their abilities to make change. Let's follow through with this. And Dylan's all for it. He wants to continue to go out there and speak and engage and enlighten people and be kind of that centerpiece until he has a mustache. And then I don't think that's going to work anymore. But until he has a mustache.
Uh-oh.
Hey, guys. Like, you're not, how old are you? I'm 40.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, when you turn 18, 19, to whatever age, like what do you think Dylan will be doing? I'm going to refer to you in the third person, like you're a boxer. What are you going to be doing when you grow up?
Well, I'm not going to be a I'm not going to be a boxer, but I want to be a doctor or a scientist.
You can be both. I think if
Why not?
Get a stethoscope and a microscope.
Yeah.
And do you know what kind of doctor you want to be? What do you want to study? Do you want to fix hearts? Do you want to fix livers? Do you want to just tap people on the knee and make their test their reflexes?
I could fix hearts. I'll do whatever I can.
Well, you fixed my heart today.
I'll fix hearts. I'll fix brains. I'll fix lungs. Fix anything.
But it's funny. Well, you say that, and then I think it's interesting too when you mention like the statistics. Like, there's 30 million people with rare diseases, right. And I find like a lot of social causes. Usually there's no sort of umbrella organization that governs. There's a bunch of disparate different things happening. And I think rare diseases in and of itself you talk about having Chocolate Bar be a platform and a voice for all those individuals. It's a pretty amazing opportunity.
It could be cool. You know, it's funny. We, you look at studies, look at statistics, you hear sort of the rhetoric on the news about the dinner table kind of being dead. You know, the way people work today is very different. The family unit looks very, very different. And frankly, families just don't have dinner together the way they used to. And we feel like we could sort of take that family dinner table model and move it to somewhere else in the week or a time on the weekend where it doesn't matter if it's mom or if it's dad or if it's brother, sister, uncle, aunt, whatever, friend, it's a family, and bring that family unit together, however many people that is or is not, and create something and aim that creativity. And even though the dinner table may be compromised, it doesn't mean that you can't bring that dinner table model somewhere else and sort of recreate it in the image of fun and innovation and change.
What are your other kids' strengths?
Man, Jack is incredible. Jack is another compassionate heart, a kid who he wears his emotions on his sleeve. So we kind of love to see, you know, his sort of beautiful response to people in need, to friends in need. You know, we were driving, it was a couple weeks ago, and we were driving up the street, and one of the older neighbors was like struggling to get her trash cans up the driveway. And Jack's like, "Mom, pull over." And we're like, "Whoa, what's going on?" He's like, "Pull over." She pulls over. He hops out of the car and brings her trash cans up to the side of the street. And I'm just thinking to myself, again, patting ourselves on the back, but this is like just these kids. I think it's a different time, and kids are a bit more sensitive, and wanting to help is just part of the chemistry. It's part of the DNA. And I think the
general thinking is that they learn it from somewhere.
My wife's an incredible model. I mean, we've been together forever, and even in college, I remember she would feed people's meters when they were expired. I'm like, "What are you doing? Do you like that guy?"
Yeah, who?
It's like,
whose gremlin is that?
Yeah, I'm like the dumb caveman. Why are you doing that? And she's like, "Oh, I'm just helping," you know. And she took them last year to the market, and they saw a family that was outside asking for money, and so she took the kids back in the market and bought like a whole Thanksgiving dinner for the family and gave it to them. And it's like, it's that modeling, I think, that she's a remarkable human being. You know, I'm just the dumb caveman, but she is.
I'm marketing this. I can market whatever you decide to do.
Right. It's just, she's remarkable. I mean, she's brilliant too. So she just is one of those special people that I think the modeling has definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely like the domino effect, right? Yeah. And you kind of don't know. Like you say, we didn't, you know, it was we created a monster almost in a sense. It's like we had no idea. Yeah. So you got this dinner idea and some other things on the table. It's just interesting when you think about like the ability for you to push the kids a little bit further and a little bit further. How much influence have you had on like molding the business? You know, because you have great ideas, obviously, Dylan. You're welcome. And but then it takes the adult effort to bring it to life. Like, how much do you course correct along the way, and like find teachable moments in the course of this action?
Yeah. Oh, I think they happen all the time. You know, another story. We were in Houston, Texas, Dylan was doing his presentations. And again, the effect of this has just been so surreal. We get a phone call from a friend of a friend of a friend who heard that Dylan was in town speaking, and they wanted to let us know that their son, or the friend of the friend of the friend's son, was in the hospital at Children's Hospital Houston with this disease. Problem is, he was in a coma because through a set of circumstances, which happen all the time to these kids, he slipped into a coma. And we were invited to the hospital to go see him. And for us, that was an incredible moment for Dylan, because Dylan, seeing Jonah day in and day out, knowing that Jonah has this disease, he knows that it's perilous, but it hasn't really hit him in the way that it hit him when we were asked to go to the hospital where a child with this disease was in a coma and was likely going to die. And Dylan was begging the doctor, begging the nurse, begging anyone that would listen to him to go in and see this child, but they wouldn't let him because he was underage, and they wouldn't let him in there. So we had to explain to him, this is what's going on. We're going to go in and say hello to him. And we walked in there, and it was just devastating. And the child was hooked up to a lot of machines, and on the foot of his bed was the chocolate bar book.
Oh, wow.
And that to us was like, we just started crying, because it was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? It's not as if we brought a book and they're, you know,
yeah.
They just had this book sitting on the foot of his bed because this book served as inspiration to him and to his family and to kids that he knew with this disease, that there was hope. And he used to read this book to his little son, little brother, who also had the disease. It's so horrible.
Wow.
And so, you know, we went back out and explained to Dylan what was going on, and that, you know, he didn't get the right amount of, you know, cornstarch that he was supposed to get, or whatever the story was. And, you know, for Dylan, he realized right then and there, wow, you know, we could have a tremendous and profound effect on these children and on this disease if we just keep fighting. And that was around the time where we were at that point where, can we get to that $1 million? And this, I think, really charged up all of us and gave Dylan some proof that, you know, we had to go keep going.
The need is still there.
The need's there. Yeah.
Good job. How's
thank you.
You're a quick learner. How's Jonah doing?
He's doing good. A couple of weeks ago, he actually did get an infection and ended up in the hospital. Like I said, if they even get a cold, they can end up in the hospital. So he was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago because he got this infection. And I was sad. He was missing a lot of school. So then I went to the hospital one day and visited him, and we played checkers and we played a bunch of other games.
That's good.
Connect Four and...
I'm pretty good at Connect Four, first of all. So next time you come in, I'm putting the Connect Four game right here. We can just play while we talk.
I'm champ.
Okay. what else happens in the lifestyle of Dylan? Like, are you playing in any sports? Or like, do you do anything? Or is Chocolate Bar like your extracurricular activity?
Well, I do a lot of more things. I just recently had football. It just ended. Our season was over. We won one game.
out of how many? 40. Right. That's good. A W is a W. You gotta celebrate. How did you celebrate? Did you dump Gatorade on the coach?
Yeah, we just got a bunch of pizza.
Oh, okay. That's the best way to celebrate.
Dump pizza on the coach.
Ha, it's hot!
So I also, now I'm starting basketball season, and I just did AYSO soccer, and I'm doing a bunch of other things.
I don't understand.
What video game? what video games? What kind of?
Well, I play Minecraft, and I play Clash of Clans, and Agario, and.
This Agario thing's really interesting. Have you seen this game?
No. I thought you said Sicario, which I was like, I don't... No.
I'll explain.
You are not allowed to see that movie.
Agario is like a game where you're this little tiny cell, basically in this little white space. Well, it's pretty big, but it ends eventually because you need a... It can't go on forever or else, you know.
Or else so, it's space.
Yeah. So then you're this little guy, and then there's these tiny dots that you eat to get a little bigger. Then there's other cells that eat those stuff too to get big. So then you like try to eat them, and they try to eat you. And if you want to like team with them, you could press like this button, which gives them like 10 of your cells, 10 of part of your cell, and it gives and you give it to them, and then they could get big, and then you could give it to them, and they could give it back to you. So, so yeah, it's basically really fun. The highest I've gotten, I was in second place on the whole leaderboard with people all around the world playing anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, as a cell, is it like a real, like, is it like a, well, you don't know, Pac-Man. So this is the first thing I thought when there's like dots eating dots. Is it like a real cell, like a body cell, or are you just a dot that you keep getting bigger and bigger and you take over the world?
Yeah, it's kind of like a dot that you keep on getting bigger on eating people and try to get on the leaderboard and get really big and eat other people and get ginormous.
Do people know they're playing against the chocolate bar guy?
No.
You're like, Chocolate Bar 07, that's your gamer tag.
And also, like, the highest I've gotten, like, the most I've eaten is 7,000. Yeah. The first time I played, I got 1,000. First time. First round ever.
Basketball, football, chocolate, video games, decent student. Yeah. You're pretty amazing. I'm going to have my daughter listen to this over and over again. and my son, too, so I can get him in there, like, early. Just get it in the subconscious.
Yeah.
So the show is called Innovation Crush. Dad, I'll ask you, what do you see out in the world as a, you know, former Disney marketer, like, that you're crushing on? Technology, food, movement, art, I don't know.
Food.
I'm so hungry.
Food.
That's why you made the pizza reference.
Right, exactly. You know, it's funny, there's so much going on right now. I feel like, you know, whether you're reading TechCrunch or whatever, Fast Company, it's like you just feel overwhelmed. It's like you have to pick a couple poisons and just go with them and fall in love with them and track them, because if you try to track everything, you're going to lose your mind. You know, the other, I think it was a couple weeks ago, New York Times sent out, you know, sort of launching their new app with Verse and their VR and in conjunction with Cardboard, Google. Yep. And just getting lost in this whole sort of VR narrative has been really interesting to me.
Have you tried it?
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's so cool.
Have you done it too?
Yeah.
Did you do the New York Times? You didn't do the news one. Which VR have you done?
I've done the Google Card Box.
Okay.
But I do have the New York Times one, and I will try it out soon.
It's awesome because you finally see where this is going. And it's like, with the New York Times piece, you're like, okay, it's interesting that so much of the storytelling has been in the pro-social and sort of the cause space, you know, tracking Syria and tracking some of the, you know, these incredible stories about kids and being displaced around the world. But seeing the narrative come through in VR, it was spectacular to me. It was just, you really feel like there is some wonderful storytelling to be told in a whole new way. You can't tell stories the way you used to. Through VR, it's disrupting storytelling in a whole new way, and it was just, to me, really kind of moving and exciting.
Maybe they'll turn it into something like an Oculus, where you could get some of the games I mentioned, like Minecraft or Clash of Clans or Agaria.
I'm bringing you to my next brainstorm. next time I have a brainstorm, I'm like, you know who we need in here? Dylan Siegel. What do you have that you're crushing on outside of Agaria? Is there something that you're like, oh my gosh? I saw your LeBrons. Those are cool. I was crushing on those.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You earned them.
Your shoes are cool too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. These are questionable. I have questionable fashion sense, but thank you.
I didn't want to say anything.
you got the new Chucks on. This is a stylish group.
They're really cool.
last but not least, I'll start with you, Dad, so you can set the bar. Right? Even though it's not, Dylan will set the chocolate bar.
Raising the bar. Let's raise the bar.
Raise
the chocolate bar.
All sorts of branding happening. innovation to me is, complete the phrase, please.
Innovation to me is telling a story that people care about and mastering the ability to get that story to as many people as you can, because if a couple people care, then more people are going to care. And it's the way that you sort of tell that story and the way you get that story out that becomes innovative. You know, I'm inspired by so many different people, even people that have been on your show, like, you know, like Brent Bushnell and Elon. I mean, these guys are just like breaking all kinds of storytelling barriers and bringing really new and unique stuff to kids, to parents, to families, you know, the whole thing. And it's just awesome. So to me, innovation is really...
You mean it's chocolate bar?
It's the chocolate bar. Innovation is just watching what's going on in this world and countless people just reinventing the traditional way to tell a story and blowing people's minds constantly.
That's awesome.
I just love to get my mind blown, and it's blown beyond.
Well, keep listening to more of the show, and then...
You're doing it, man. You're covering everybody. That's incredible. It's really cool.
You want to take a crack at it? Innovation to me is...
Innovation to me is awesome.
That is probably the best one we've gotten so far.
Chocolate bar. Correction.
You kind of pointed at me at chocolate bar that time. We'll save that for another show.
I think you just had a whole chocolate bar.
You're going to be amped up. Good luck for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, you can have them.
Hopefully I don't throw up for eating all that chocolate.
How many candy bars have you eaten?
My whole life?
Yeah, let's see if we can tally it up. Just do some science and averaging.
500 maybe.
Okay, all right, that's a good number.
Wow,
that's it's 50 per year.
Parent of the year.
It's like a candy bar a week. Yeah, good job, Dad.
Parent of the year, right?
No, I'm joking. I probably had like five in my whole life.
Parent of the year.
There you go. Good job. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming by. This has been awesome. I'm sorry. It's been chocolate bar.
You're so chocolate bar.
I appreciate it.
You're more than chocolate bar.
Oh, what then? Chocolate cake.
Your chocolate bar.
Wow, double chocolate bar.
Wow, awesome, you just awesome. Keep raising the chocolate bar.
2X.
So Dylan, where do people go if they want to buy books, if they want to learn more?
Go to chocolatebarbook.com.
All right. I don't think I caught that.
I think you might have just scared off.
I think my ears are bleeding.
I guess I'll say it louder.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
No, to you.
No, to you.
No, trust me, to you.
No, I'm serious, because you got a whole mashed potatoes to figure out how you're going to eat. Mm-hmm. So, or if you're going to eat them. But I say you go for it. Your dad's going to put a lot of butter and milk and salt in them.
We're going to load it up.
Mm-hmm. It's almost soul food. And on that note, everyone, thank you. But is there a Twitter handle? Since Disney was angry about your social media stuff, like, yeah,
at So Chocolate Bar.
At So Chocolate Bar. Yeah, all right.
And hashtag So Chocolate Bar.
Done deal. Everyone. Hashtag. Oh, hashtag. Keep going. Keep going.
Hashtag So Chocolate Bar.
Now I will close.
Please.
Aww.
Everyone, thank you for tuning in to another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you. Ooh.